Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone, and happy Giving Tuesday. We begin today on the roads of New York City, Jersey City, Hoboken, as models for the rest of the country. I know many of you saw the New York Times story over the weekend called The Exceptionally American Problem of Rising Roadway Deaths, but I wonder how many of you saw the Bloomberg news story that came out on Friday called Where Vision Zero is Working. Now, you know from the de Blasio years in New York City that Vision Zero is the name of the aspirational program to cut traffic-related deaths from hundreds a year down to zero. Mayor Adams has also embraced Vision Zero as a goal in a program. Well, guess what? Hoboken has accomplished it. Now, of course, there's no apples-to-apples comparison between a city of 60,000 people and one across the river with 8 million, but nevertheless, the Bloomberg article tells us Hoboken hasn't had a traffic death in 4 years. And Jersey City, right next door, has had zero traffic deaths on its local roads and just five on state roads that go through town all of this year. So what can New York City learn from Hoboken and Jersey City? What can the United States learn from us and from the rest of the world? With us now, Angie Schmidt, writer and planning consultant and author of the Bloomberg article and the book called Right of Way, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America, and James Lee, chair of the board of Safe Streets JC, a transportation safety advocacy group in Jersey City. Angie and James, thanks for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks. Thank you.
Angie, can we start with this stat from your article? In the decade from 2010 to 2020, traffic deaths in New York City fell 19%, while nationwide they went up by 8%. How would you begin to explain that dichotomy?
Yeah, so I think New York City is ahead of a lot of the country on this. They have great local advocates that I've worked with that are very outspoken, and they have a very sophisticated Department of Transportation that has redesigned a lot of intersections. So there's a lot of good stuff happening in New York, even though I know that advocates aren't satisfied, and I agree they shouldn't be with the progress that's happened.
And longer term, stats I've seen say New York City had around 700 traffic deaths in 1990, and that came all the way down to around 200 in 2018, but has gone up some during the pandemic. So big picture, was the city doing something intentionally very right over a 30-year period to go from 700 deaths a year to 200?
Yeah, I think it has. I think it has. Like I said, thousands of intersections have been redesigned. There's the public plazas program, protected bike lanes all over the city. So it really has changed a lot. But again, there's still sort of a long way to go, I would say. Yeah.
And we'll get into some of those ways that we can go that long way. And we'll get into why this reversed during the pandemic and got worse, even as traffic itself was getting more sparse. But Jimmy Lee from Safe Streets JC, Angie's article cites Jersey City as a particular success story with zero traffic deaths this year on city roads and just five on state roads that run through the city limits. Can you make that distinction for our listeners between city roads and state roads and why that might matter to traffic crashes?
Yeah, absolutely. So for city roads, the city is in control of maintenance and redesigning them. And obviously in the past few years, city has made really great efforts to redesign them to add bump outs, you know, just make sure that cars are turning at safe speeds and they're not going to hit pedestrians in crosswalks, narrowing lanes so that people don't feel that there's so much room to, you know, kind of zoom around and they're driving the city-wide speed limit, which is a safer speed limit of 25 miles per hour. Hoboken has actually gone down to 20 miles per hour because it is actually safer for pedestrians and bicyclists. But you know, state roads, they follow. The city is not able to influence their design, and oftentimes, you know, New Jersey DOT and the Turnpike, you know, they actually design for speed, which is sort of kind of unfortunately directly at odds with safety. And so we're talking about the New Jersey Turnpike extension, which feeds through the Holland Tunnels. Of folks have driven, you know, to or from New York onto Canal Street. Very likely you've driven on the Turnpike extension. There's also a variety of state roads that are either truck routes or that are, you know, feeder roads, all, you know, also to the Holland Tunnel. So one example of this would be Route 139. It's actually a capped highway, if you can believe it or not. I know there's a lot of talk in around the country about capping highways and reducing pollution and increasing safety. It's actually a capped
Right.
highway
New York is
where.
talking about it for the Cross-Bronx Expressway. I don't know how seriously they're talking about it, but I know there are proposals out there that we've talked about on this show. So go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's an important environmental justice issue, and safety issue. And you know, NJDOT actually has a highway on top. So you have a highway below, and then next to city streets, next to, you know, tall apartment buildings, you know, it's a road where people walk across to get to work, that high school students walk across to get to school. And yet, it's designed by the state for high speeds
Right.
as a
So
highway.
that's a,
As a
and so
highway.
that's a state road, not a city road that goes through
Exactly.
Jersey City. I didn't know about that highway on top of the capped highway. That would seem to kind of defeat the purpose, wouldn't it?
I would say so. I think a lot of people here feel it should not be designed the way it is, and it's very recent actually, where it got redesigned for higher speeds in just 2019, and that's to the that's in spite of, you know, efforts by local citizens and the city to resist that and oppose that.
So on those kinds of roads, there have been five traffic fatalities in Jersey City this year. On the city streets, there have been zero. Do you see Jersey City as a safe street success story? Angie refers to it that way in her article.
Yeah, cautiously, I would say yes. You know, I think it was a great article to, I think, give encouragement and show examples of how it's working, you know, across the country. But I would also say it's really encouraging for us here in Jersey City to see that we can reach zero on city and county roads. You know, it hasn't happened before, right? And you know, there's these efforts are based on empirical evidence, and you know, so much of the advocacy is based on the experiences of cities actually accomplishing this all around the world. And it's a really big change for us. Now, I would say that going from, you know, 15 deaths and you know, 10 on or 11 on city and county roads, this is a big change. But I'd just be cautious and say that, you know, for there's more to go. We're never satisfied, and there's many streets here where anybody, you know, local residents will especially tell you, you know, if I'm crossing, you know, Kennedy Boulevard, it's really, really dangerous, and you know, I have to be careful. And even if I have the right of way, I might not cross, even if, you know, because a car is coming and I don't know if they're going to stop. Like, I'm just not going to cross. And so there's still a way to go, but it is a really big change, and the city has put in a multi-year effort. And there's also been great advocacy, not just from Safe Streets, but actually from Bike JC as well. You know, they've been leading monthly bike rides, that have, you know, up to hundreds of people attending, where they ride in a big group and they show how pleasant and how safe it can be to travel on our city roads. And I think that's generated a lot of interest in protected bike lanes and safe streets infrastructure all throughout the city.
Yeah, and listeners, we can take phone calls for our guests here on traffic safety in New York, New Jersey, America, and the world. We will get into the angle of the New York Times article from over the weekend called The Exceptionally American Problem of Rising Roadway Deaths. We'll get into why traffic deaths went up during the pandemic as driving itself went down. So we invite your calls, your comments, your questions for our guests, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Jimmy Lee from Safe Streets NJ and Angie Schmidt, who wrote that article in Bloomberg about success stories in our area in contrast to the rest of the nation. And she's also author of the book Right of Way, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America. So, Angie, what happened during the pandemic? A stat from the Times article is that in the first pandemic year of 2020, as car travel plummeted worldwide, so did traffic deaths worldwide. But in the U.S., they went up. I'm sure you have similar stats. So what happened nationally and what happened in New York?
Yeah, so when people started telecommuting, there was a lot less traffic. And what happened was traffic was acting as kind of a control on speeding and reckless driving, right? It's harder to road race if there's a lot of congestion. So we saw a big increase in speeding and reckless driving. And I think sort of as time has gone on, we're witnessing a little bit of the social fallout of the pandemic. I think a lot of our pandemic policies had some unintended consequences. And one of the things that has come out of it is more aggressive behavior, more antisocial behavior. And it's been really deadly on the roadways.
Yeah. And for New York, I don't have last year's final figure, but I have one through late November of last year from the New York Post back then. It said so far this year, 222 people have died in car crashes in New York City, according to NYPD stats. So the city was not immune from rising traffic deaths despite less driving. And Jimmy, I see from your group's Facebook posts that 2021 was the deadliest year for road users in New Jersey in more than 30 years, and that 2022 could be worse statewide. So what's been going on statewide in New Jersey during the pandemic?
Yeah, there's been an epidemic of traffic violence, and the numbers are going absolutely in the wrong direction. I think to some of the factors that Angie's pointing out in terms of less traffic, encouraging more people to drive and drive more and drive faster, that's a really big factor. One of the things that we also advocate for is mass transit. And one of the, it's not just beneficial for cities because it's more efficient. They're actually also a lot safer. So buses are considered 8 to 10 times safer per passenger mile than driving. Trains are, something like 17 times safer per passenger mile. Statewide, there's also been there hasn't been a Vision Zero effort. Some of the statewide advocates and victims' families are advocating for that actively. I hope we do adopt that. And sort of the problem with not having safe streets infrastructure, if you're from a city street to a highway to a rural road, is that if something changes, it can fill in the gaps and lead to this dangerous behavior. If you don't design it for safe streets, and then there's less interest in traffic enforcement, that's not something you can necessarily rely on. New York City does have automated traffic enforcement, and so that can be and will be going forward 24/7. But in New Jersey, we don't have that. Without safe streets infrastructure, without orienting towards a Vision Zero goal, you're not, these bad behaviors can just kind of fill in those gaps, and it's like water. It will flow to kind of the lowest point. And, you know, I will also just mention that, you know, the traffic mentality, you know, we attend these public hearings for these different redesigns of roads, and you think about how they're counting things, and it's just wrong unless you also consider safety. You know, they literally do not count people crossing the road as part of their goals, as part of what they call level of service for their roads. They literally only count the number of cars, not the number of passengers in those cars, not the movement of people on bikes, on trains, on buses, you know, walking. They just care about the number of cars that they can put through a particular segment of road, and they're not considering safety. And so, you know, that's sort of the context and how we end up with a growing number of deaths. And, you know, there's a lot of really great writing out there, you know, that Andrea has written about and others on, you know, larger and larger vehicles, and that also contributing to the growing amount of traffic violence.
Yeah, it is incredible that in this age when everybody knows about climate change and everybody wants to cut down in theory, not to mention rising prices for gasoline, the average size of cars continues to go up. And we're going to get into that a little bit more as we go. But I want to take our first caller, and it's a caller from Jersey City, Matt in Jersey City. You're on WNYC. Hi, Matt.
Hi. Hey, Brian. Great to be on. Love this topic. And I sort of just wanted to echo a lot of the stuff we've heard from Jimmy already. I think over on this side of the river, we can look at like some of the announcements for greenways and things very jealously. And it's great to be reminded that we are doing so well here. But I think the idea here that these proposals need to be exported and expanded, you know, I think one of the things that's so frustrating for us here is having a very progressive governor who is quite literally a limousine liberal. You know, next time he's on, or maybe we can get Nancy to ask him some questions about this. He's so progressive on so many issues. He's so great on sustainability, except when it comes to the Department of Transportation. You know, I would love to bike my kids to school in Hoboken. I do sometimes, but we do have to cross that state highway that he's talking about, 139, the highway over the highway. And they just repaved, and there's plenty of room for bike lanes there. And there's like 15-foot wide car lanes where there could easily be space for more transit uses. And it's like they don't even think about it. It's all about car throughput. And actually, the most devastating thing that maybe you'll get into, right, is they want to expand the highway leading into the Holland Tunnel, which is only going to drive more cars onto the city streets. And, you know, as someone who drives now, I think it's fascinating that one of the problems is I think people remember when the streets were more open, and now the traffic's coming back. So it's like the traffic is only making me want to bike more, but also seeing all the crazy drivers makes me anxious. And that's why I think this infrastructure is so important, and we need to get more and more people on board. And, you know, hopefully we can.
Really interesting, Matt. Thank you very much. We're going to take a break and then continue. Kate in Jersey City, we see you. She has a different take on the city than I think we just heard from Matt. We're going to get into the title of Angie's book, the subtitle, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America. We'll ask her where she thinks race and class come in. And for both of you, I want to acknowledge our caller board. You know, whenever we do topics like this, we may start out talking about cars, but half the calls or more are about bicycles and motorized scooters and things like that. So we'll get to see where you think those things fit in to your big Vision Zero picture. As we continue on The Brian Lehrer Show, stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC as we talk about new stats which show traffic fatalities diverging very much between New York and, let's say, the New York metro area, New York, Jersey City, and Hoboken in general, which are the subjects of a Bloomberg News story that came out on Friday called Where Vision Zero is Working. And the rest of the country, there was that Time story over the weekend called The Exceptionally American Problem of Rising Roadway Deaths. So we're talking with Angie Schmidt, who wrote the Bloomberg story, and she's author of the book Right of Way, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America, and James Lee, chair of the board of Safe Streets, JC, a transportation safety advocacy group in Jersey City. So Angie, about the subtitle of your book, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America, where do race and class come in?
Yeah, so it's pretty clear from the statistics that Black folks and Native folks are at increased risk to be killed while walking. Native folks in particular are about twice as likely to be killed, and Black people about 50% more likely. And some data does show Latinos at increased risk as well. So there's a couple things going on there. Those groups may be less likely to own a car, so more likely to be walking in the first place. And secondly, there's some discrimination happening. And we see this in metro area after metro area where Black neighborhoods, Latino neighborhoods are under-resourced in terms of the safe streets amenities that whiter, wealthier neighborhoods are able to attract more easily.
So do Vision Zero policies need to be race and class specific? You know, culturally competent, if that's the right way to put it, like many other policies need to be most effective?
Yes, absolutely. An example I use in my book is Portland. And even though Portland has done a ton of investment in safe walking and safe biking infrastructure, they've actually seen this problem get worse. And there's a big disparity in Portland. On the poorer side of town in East Portland, the poorer, more diverse side of town, people are twice as likely to be killed while in traffic, basically. And the amenities are really lacking there. There's less bike lanes, there's less crosswalks, there's even less bike racks on that part of town. So yes, we do need to, if we're not sort of conscious of where we're investing and how it relates to those sort of societal conventions we have, we can sort of increase the inequality in the facilities and also worsen the traffic safety problem.
Kate in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kate.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I live in the Greenville section of Jersey City, which is not downtown Jersey City. It's the polar opposite, where there really is no funding or care from the government or the mayor, whoever runs it. There are a few bumps, those speed bumps on side streets. There's no biker's lane except like maybe it starts a little bit closer to downtown Jersey City and Lincoln Park. I think there might be some biker's lanes, but there's really no access to biking. I mean, unless you're a daredevil. The speeding is ferocious. Reckless driving is ferocious. And just wondering if there's going to be any sort of like advocacy pushing towards the more urban.
Yeah. Jimmy, this goes to exactly what we were just talking about with Angie, right? A kind of race and class disparity. You hear Kate's story from the Greenville section. Do you advocate along these lines at Safe Streets JC?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And this is why we aren't done. It is literally painful on a daily basis for people throughout the city. And so there's a lot further to go. We're all always interested in organizing with folks in different neighborhoods to advocate. You know, this is, I guess, how the sausage is made. But, you know, if there are groups in each neighborhood that are willing to advocate for Safe Streets infrastructure, we would love to work with them. And it gives motivation and pressure on our local council council persons to support it. I don't think we have quite the same political system as in New York City, where there's sort of this member deference, as I understand it. But but we kind of do also. So, you know, if the Safe Streets infrastructure is not locally supported, sometimes it can pass over folks that actually need it the most around. You know, if people are relying on, you know, the light rail station on a daily basis, but we allow, you know, cars to be blocking all the entrances and all the crosswalks and those kids are taking, you know, mass transportation to get to school every day. They're crossing the crosswalk to get the playgrounds. You know, this is a little bit tangent, but, you know, Governor Murphy said, okay, we're going to put a stadium in Liberty State Park. You know, no state parks have stadiums, but, you know, at least in New Jersey. And he's like, okay, we'll put a stadium in Liberty State Park. We're going to build all these, like, recreational facilities, you know, for the people of Jersey City that don't have access to recreation. This is not the problem at all. There's plenty of ball fields. There's plenty of parks. The issue is, can kids safely get to them, right? Like, if you have a 12-year-old, do you feel comfortable letting them walk four blocks to a playground, or do you worry that they, you know,
might get hit by a car?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I want to thank Kate in Jersey City. Thank you for raising that in that way. And Angie, you use Hoboken as a success story in your article, citing in part a pedestrian crossing strategy called daylighting. What's daylighting?
Yeah, I love this. I think Hoboken really is a cool example that places around the country can look to, because a lot of the reforms there that have been so effective are relatively low cost and simple. And so this idea of daylighting, it's all about the visibility at the intersections. So what daylighting means is they just pulled back the parking a little bit from the intersections. If cars are parked right up against the intersections, then pedestrians are sort of having to stick their head out and look. It really affects sort of drivers' field of visibility a lot. So that, again, it's very low cost. They're using paint, in some cases bollards, to prohibit cars from parking too close to the intersections. And it's been very effective there.
That's daylighting. Well, you know, Merriam-Webster just declared its word of the year for 2022 to be gaslighting. But people have been saying gaslighting for years. Maybe it should have been daylighting. And then more people would be talking about this. Karen on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Brian. I'm lucky enough to work from home in the 80s on Central Park West, and I have a really good view of my block and half a block above and below me. If I look at the relatively newly installed bike lane and I count in a minute or 45 seconds, I count 10, you know, people going by in the bike lane, more than half of them are going the wrong way, and more than half of them are on motorized bikes. Then I look in the downtown lane that's just two lanes of regular traffic, and there's bike messengers, you know, who are not using the bike lane that is either in Central Park or on Columbus Avenue. They're riding with traffic. There was such a push to install these lanes and this idea that if you build it, they will come. I've seen at least three accidents in the last 6 months where people walked, you know, got into ambulances. They built a catastrophe. It's complete. Who's in charge of regulating it? If you don't have rules or people don't follow rules, it's just an increase in accidents.
Karen, thank you. And Angie, you know, we've been doing some segments lately on the show on motorized two-wheeler injuries and deaths. More than 500 e-bike or e-scooter injuries in New York this year is one stat I saw reported. But transportation safety advocates like to say the overwhelming problem is cars. And I'm sure that's true, but is it increasingly these other motorized vehicles too? You know, we could take calls like Karen's all day.
Yeah, I do tend to agree with the advocates. I understand, like, you know, there's sort of the devil you know versus the new sort of scourge, I guess, and they are relatively new. And I do think, you know, with e-scooters and everything, there are some potential safety issues, and it's sort of a consumer product safety issue, but I mean, compared to the carnage that's caused by drivers, and again, we're talking about rule following. We've seen this big increase since the pandemic began in reckless driving, speeding. These are really dangerous activities, drunk driving as well. Speeding, and I think it's there's sort of a double standard with how we look at rule breaking, where speeding is sort of, we sort of wink at speeding, even though it causes 10,000 deaths a year, and these more minor infractions caused by people or committed by people using vehicles with much less potential for harm are much more scrutinized. So I don't know why that is. And maybe there is a need for certain reforms to help protect people from motorized scooters and that kind of thing as they become more pronounced in the city.
Also. Jimmy, I'll give you a last word on this topic and then we're out of time. From your advocacy position, yeah. Are you acknowledging e-scooters and yeah. to some degree e-bikes as also a problem that needs to be dealt with, even if they're not as deadly as cars?
Yeah, I think, you know, I would agree with Angie. I think it's the question is scale, you know. I understand that sometimes people, you know, feel annoyed, but, you know, it really goes back to that, you know, 700 deaths in New Jersey a year. You know, the Turnpike and Garden State Parkway, which they want to widen, they're talking about close to 15,000 crashes a year, you know, 40 a day. The vast majority of the deaths are caused by vehicles. And this is due to basic physics. It's mass times velocity squared. And you're talking about a 4,000 pound vehicle, you know, going, you know, not, you know, when a vehicle is going 30, 40, 50, 70, 80, 90 miles per hour, that just really doesn't compare to, you know, speed limited e-bikes that are largely going 20 miles per hour and weigh, you know, 200 pounds, maybe, with the rider, depending. You know, I think, There can be simple rules, but
500 crashes with injuries.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's really you're really looking towards preventing deaths first of all, and I think we should do better on all fronts. But you know, let's not take our eye off the ball that the vast majority of deaths are created by vehicles, and sort of the issue with the bikes is, you know, if we overregulate them and people get into cars instead, we may inadvertently create more dangers. When an Uber delivery driver in a car rushes through a neighborhood to earn a living, but create that pollution of road safety to other folks, if we force people to get off bikes and including e-bikes, and we force them to get into cars, how much more danger is that going to cause?
James Lee is chair of the board of Safe Streets JC, a transportation safety advocacy group in Jersey City. Angie Schmidt wrote the Bloomberg News article this weekend called Where Vision Zero is Working, and she's the author of the book Right of Way, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America. Thank you both so much for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thanks.